The content and opinions expressed during this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers. They are not intended in any way to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent disease.
Welcome to Weight Loss Conversations, brought to you by 3Health Medical Weight Loss Solutions. Your hosts, Bradley Butterfield, Marlene Sexton, and Brandy Wiltermuth, have over 30 years' experience treating health issues associated with excess body weight. Get ready for an in-depth, honest discussion about weight loss and your health. Be sure to visit our website at 3.health. That's T-H-R-E-E.health.
Welcome to Weight Loss Conversations with 3Health Medical Weight Loss Solutions. I'm Brad Butterfield, the Executive Director of 3Health and a practicing psychotherapist. And with me this morning is Brandy Wiltermuth, ARNP, and our Medical Director of 3Health.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brandy. Also with us is Alexis Morales, our operations manager and medical assistant, and kind of do everything else in our clinic, and she's operating our production board this morning.
Good morning.
Hi,
good to
Alexis.
Be here.
I'm glad you're here with us. Marlene Sexton, our director of therapy, isn't with us today. She couldn't be here. And so we're going to talk about behavioral health and medical weight loss, the combination of the two. And so, Brandy, we have a number of new patients from another medical weight loss program that's been discontinued in Seattle that have come to work with us in our medical weight loss program. The other program didn't have a behavioral component, and we've been finding that these patients have been very excited to be part of an integrated medical weight loss program that is both medical and behavioral. So talk to me a little bit about what you've been discovering, and I will also, what these patients are messaging to us.
Well, we offer a free consultation, as you know. Mm-hmm. So if people are a little hesitant to just sign up for our program and move from one to the other, we meet with them and talk about what we do and how we have a lot of similarities to the program that they were in, and then where we sort of take a departure from what they were doing there. And it's amazing, and I mean, I'm not surprised by it, but I think the response to the fact that we address the behavioral side of the relationship with food has been a very positive response. And I mean, obviously, we made our clinic so that that's what we would do, but it's just great to see that people respond to it so favorably, and it kind of reinforces the fact that people know that they can lose weight, and they've done it probably multiple times, but they haven't figured out how to keep the weight off, and it's not a matter of lack of motivation or that they feel really good when they do lose weight. It's that there's something else that gets in the way and they haven't figured out how to cope with that. And food tends to be a way for people to cope. So I'm really pleased to see that people, A, recognize that and know that that's something that they need. And that they're so open to it.
And so I've always found it interesting because a number of years ago, a patient looked at me and she had recounted by name a number of diets, sort of even on her finger. She named all of the different diet programs she'd been with.
Right.
And then she looked at me and quite seriously, she said, you know, I'm probably an authority on dieting and all of these different diets, and I didn't doubt that.
So a
number of patients that come to us have been on other diets and commercial diet programs, and I never doubt that they know a lot about dieting.
And they know a fair amount about nutrition.
Okay, and have lost a lot of pounds, a lot of weight over the years.
They have been successful losing weight.
Okay, and so we see patients that have lost a lot of pounds but then have regained weight. They haven't sustained the weight loss.
Right. So that's typical.
By the time they get to us, they've been in a number of other programs.
Right.
Okay.
So, you know, one side of that, I think, is that you have to give credit to people for not giving up and really being motivated to try another thing. But I think they also recognize that it's not just about that. And, you know, and we do a little bit of different kind of nutritional intervention. So even if people think they know a lot about nutrition and they know what they need to do, which is what we hear all the time, they say, I know what I need to do, I just can't seem to do it. The fact is that sometimes for their body, they have to do something a little bit different. And so it's not always that, you know, they have all the information they need when it comes to nutrition. So we hope to educate them on that.
And so I want to interrupt you. Would it be fair to say, and I think I've said this, and I even heard a physician a number of years ago say this to me, and it kind of upset me when he said it. I have a different understanding now. You could pretty much get anybody to lose weight by ridiculous eating. I mean,
there's a lot of ways to do it.
You could probably get somebody to eat grapefruit for a month and they'd lose weight, right?
I mean, if they hadn't already tried that.
Right. So when you talk about a different type of eating, talk to me, be more specific with that. So
I don't subscribe to calories in, calories out.
Okay.
I think that there's lots of examples that prove that that is flawed. That's a flawed theory. For example, I experiment on myself all the time, and I did a really aggressive ketogenic diet a few years ago where for the first week I was eating about 800 calories a day, almost no carbohydrates whatsoever, and high amounts of fat, pretty moderate protein intake, and I lost a few pounds in that week. And I really wasn't doing it to lose weight. I was doing it just to see how I feel, because I don't want to ask someone else to do something I can't do or wouldn't do. So I did that. And then the next week, I made my ketogenic diet 3,000 calories.
Wow, big difference.
And I still lost a pound or two.
Really?
But I was forcing myself to eat, which is unnatural, but I did it for the sake of science.
Okay.
And so obviously 3,000 calories a day is way above and beyond what I need, but I didn't gain weight. In fact, I lost a little bit of weight still. It was uncomfortable. I didn't really want to eat that much, especially fat. But to me, that sort of proves that it can't just be about the calories. And I wasn't changing my activity. All I was doing was going to work. And I've seen this in multiple patients, too. I've told people, you know, you have this amount of protein you need to eat based on your muscle mass. So it's, you know, individualized. And then we go by appetite and hunger and activity, whether we have to increase it or decrease it. And then the carbohydrate content of their plan is based on their metabolic situation. So if people have really high blood sugar or insulin or cholesterol or other things, that dictates how much carbohydrate we recommend. And then what's left is fat. So we are encouraging people to eat more fat than what they think they should, because otherwise they wouldn't be getting enough energy overall. And people are very resistant to that because they, you know, they have in their head that fat is bad and that fat makes you fat. But sometimes I get someone who misunderstands my directions and they will eat. For example, I had one guy who I told him he needed 30 grams of protein every meal. So for two of his meals, he was eating almonds to get 30 grams of protein, which was a huge amount of almonds. When I calculated his calorie intake that he was eating, and he lost a pound, he was eating probably 4,000 calories over what we estimated he needed. So these kinds of things have sort of been occurring and showing me that the calories really aren't as important as the quality of the food.
Okay. So you're kind of bearing down on being writing based on all the testing that you're doing, the mm-hmm. blood testing and biometric testing. So you're writing a very individual diet for each person.
Right.
Okay.
No one.
I say diet, but a nutrition program.
Right.
Program.
And it's okay. Funny because people will see our patients and say, "Hey, you know, what are you doing?" And even if the patient does try to tell them, "This is what I eat and this is how it's working," they say, "But it's not the same for you because it's so individualized." And I'm sure people are very confused about that.
Okay.
Because in the past it would be, "Oh, I'm doing the grapefruit diet," or "I'm doing the whatever diet."
Okay. So it's not one size fits all. We recognize that. And then on my side, on the behavioral, of course it's not one size fits all, because we all come to the table, so to speak, or to this program with different behaviors and different challenges in our lives.
Right. And I think what we find more often than not is that just like some of our patients come to fit into the ball gown,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, because their cholesterol or some other kind of reason, they come for the weight loss, but they find out that there are a lot of other things that they need to and want to address
sure.
to make it consistent and sustainable.
Right. And so they come for the weight loss and they discover that there's lots of other emotions and things going on in their lives
exactly.
and relationships. They come for the weight loss thinking that when they have the weight loss, all those other things will fall in place.
Right.
So it may be one thing or the other, right?
And yeah.
So Alexis, you may have discovered that even in your life. That
Well, yeah, I think a lot of people out there kind of feel like if they're thin, then they'll be happy.
Right.
Right? That's the idea.
Yeah.
But that's a horrible misconception of reality.
Sure.
Because if you're not dealing with the problems behind your weight, mm-hmm. then you're never going to be happy, whether you're thin or big.
Right.
And we see that all the time, especially with bariatric patients who've had surgery. Usually they're morbidly obese and they've lost a significant amount of weight. And they thought, well, this is going to change my life. And, you know, yes, they're able to do things more than they ever could in the past, but then they have to face things like relationship problems or family relationships that have now evolved into something different that they're
sure.
not prepared to deal
yeah.
with.
So, and that's a good point. I often saw in the first 12 or 15 months with a post-surgical patient extreme weight loss. And then the reality would sink in that they needed to really start doing the work about relationships and maybe abuse issues and other things that they had been carrying with them for a number of years. So,
yeah.
Listen, we need to take a break. And when we come back, let's start talking about some of the behavioral things and emotional things that we all have and what we often use food to numb with and to eat around in behavioral. So we'll be right back.
Introducing 3 Health Medical Weight Loss Solutions, a unique weight loss clinic backed by real medical research with a treatment focusing on the entire person, mind, body, and spirit. From medical services for obesity and high blood pressure to behavioral services for emotional eating and depression, 3 Health Medical Weight Loss Solutions can help you change your relationship with food, your relationship with yourself, and with life. Find out more, 425-606-0022. Or online at 3.health. That's 3.health.
Going our own way every day. Alternative Talk 1150.
This is Weight Loss Conversations with 3 Health. This is Brad Butterfield, and I'm here with Brandy Wiltermuth and our medical assistant, Alexis Morales, today. We've been talking about medical weight loss in our clinic and how we use both medical solutions and how we integrate the behavioral aspects of our program to work with our patients and how we think managing both mental health and medical with the patients is so integral for a holistic approach to improving our health, both our physical health and our mental health, and how important that is. And our patients are really resonating with this approach and in their care. So, Brandy, before the break, we were kind of talking about some new patients that we have from another practice that was just medical, and how they're really appreciating our behavioral portion of our practice. And at the break, we were talking about a number of our patients in their lives deal with depression. In fact, you know, it's probably true that all of us at some point are going to struggle with situational depression. Mm-hmm. And when I say situational depression, you know, we all will have loss in our lives, maybe right. loss of a loved one through death, or even loss of a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Or a job.
Or a job, yeah. And so I often, when I'm working with a patient, they'll look at me and say, gee, I'm feeling depressed. And I may say, well, tell me what's going on. And they'll say, well, I just lost a job, or I lost a relationship, or I lost a parent. And that's situational. And frankly, you should feel depressed. Who wouldn't, right?
Right.
And so if that becomes extreme, sometimes we talk about going on a course of antidepressant medication if it's called for, and you and I will work with a patient in that case. I think talk therapy is integral and important if somebody's on an antidepressant medication. But let's talk for a minute about what we also do with food mm-hmm. and nutrition and movement in that case, and how important that is too in treating depression. I know you've got some strong feelings about that.
I think that sometimes patients are depressed because they think they're depressed because of their weight, and that if they solve their weight problem, then their depression or mood issue is going to magically disappear. And once in a while, someone will have a more resistant kind of depression, where even when they are losing weight and changing their diet and moving their body, it's becoming obvious that that's still something that isn't better.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that we can't just cure mood issues or depression from changing people's energy with what they eat. But I think it's a really good kind of adjunctive therapy that should be included in that treatment. So when people come to lose weight and we're asking them to change their nutrition, I think that that can definitely help. And I think a big part of it is when people are really eating a lot of foods that drain their energy or cause major fluctuations in their energy or make them really hungry, they're going to be sort of sidelined by that and not be able to even kind of focus or think straight or recognize their energy levels. And so I think it's a good basis for a lot of people who are struggling with any kind of, mood problem, that they've got to get their energy straightened out and they've got to fuel their body appropriately.
Sure.
But it's not going to be the cure, most likely.
Okay.
So it's a piece of it. But even if people are losing weight, they feel good, they have energy, they're, focused mentally, sometimes they're still going to struggle with some adjustment to, say, a loss of a job or a loved
sure.
one.
Sure. I mean, there's lots of underlying reasons why people are struggling with depression. It can be historical. It can be reasons can be abuse in the past. There's lots of reasons that we want to look in people's lives and see what may be causes for depression. But physical aspects, we know that there's lots of reasons that your physical reasons why it can lead to depression also.
Right.
I mean, even in my own life, I know that when I'm moving my body and exercising or getting physical activity, that's a great remedy for my depression also.
Right,
It helps to move.
I used to have a hat that says running is better than therapy.
Sure.
I think that's true for a lot of people.
We know that running creates or moving creates endorphins.
But then there's people who abuse that too.
Yeah, absolutely.
They've broken bones in their feet and they don't stop running.
Well, if you get obsessed with it, sure. But moving and eating correctly is going to be a big help for dealing with depression, as are other things.
Right.
So it's kind of a holistic approach to how we can treat it.
I think we see a fair amount of people who know that and have had an injury of some kind where then that outlet, at least what they used to do for moving their body, isn't available anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then they really struggle with, well, now what do I do? Because I was an athlete and, you know, I just can't do it. And I think there's a disconnect about, I just got to do something, instead of, I have to do the thing that I was good at and doing before. And so we try to help people see that you might have to be a little flexible in your choice of moving your body. But I think that is a source of, people feeling depressed because one of their tools is now missing.
Right. Which is often why I will encourage people to take walks.
Mm-hmm.
And walking with a friend or a loved one and walking and
talking.
Or a pet. Yeah, which you and I both do. But walking and talking with people is great. I think that's a great therapy. So you're moving and practicing relationship at the same time. So
right. So, I mean, it really boils down to the same thing that we talk about all the time is that it can't just be the physical. It can't just be, I'm going to change my eating and this will be mastered. And it can't just be, I don't think it can just be, you know, let's talk about your loss that you're having. And then there's the spiritual side of it that people need to be addressing as well. But just doing one probably isn't going to make it happen.
Okay. So what you and I were talking about before we began the show this morning, and that when we formed our practice is, and when you're saying just not one thing, is that we're not looking at this medical weight loss practice as singular. And
right.
I think what I wanted to, that I have strong feelings about being your partner is that we've both been in practices and we know a lot of other medical providers. And what I admire about you is it would be much easier for you if you just took this on like a lot of other physicians and just said, well, let's just prescribe pills, you know?
Right.
And we're maybe what I refer to as just a prescription pad.
Right.
And there are a lot of providers out there that do that.
Mm-hmm.
And not really dig deep and look at this and combine the behavioral with it. Let's face it, it's when we do this and look at it holistically, it is a little bit more messy, if I can
it's
use
hard
that
work.
Term. I know. Because
it is hard work.
Even yesterday I think after a particularly difficult encounter with a patient, I kind of plopped myself in your office and put my head in my hands and said, oh my goodness, I've got a kind of a difficult problem with a patient, and you and I commiserated, or you commiserated with me to say, how are we gonna deal with a patient that is struggling, I mean truly struggling, and that's meaningful for us,
right?
And we want to help this person get well. But it's not just writing on a prescription pad.
No, it's not just eat this, not that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so it's more work.
Mm-hmm.
It's more work for us. But we have a heartfelt mission to get people better, get them well.
Yeah, because the other just doesn't work long term.
Yeah.
And I'm not really interested in band-aiding it.
Okay. Well.
And neither are you.
Well, I'm not. I don't mean to be trite, but maybe we have more fun too doing this way. I mean, if that don't mean to sound trite that way, but or it's much more meaningful. That's probably a better way to
say
it.
Yeah, it definitely is much more rewarding when people actually break through and are able to have lasting results.
So Alexis is giving me the high sign. We do need to take a break. This is Weight Loss Conversations with 3Health, and we are talking about the combination of taking care of our patients with medical weight loss solutions, both with medical and behavioral solutions. So we'll be right back after the break.
With decades of experience helping patients change their lives, 3Health Weight Loss Solutions can help you too. At 3Health, we provide proven and science-based solutions for realistic, achievable, and sustainable results. We're unique, just like you, and the relationships you have with food and yourself. Find out how we treat obesity, depression, high cholesterol, and more. Just give us a call and change your life today. 425-606-0022. Or visit us online at 3.health. That's THREE.health.
Alternative Talk 1150. It's good for what ails you. This statement has not been evaluated by the FDA.
Welcome back to Weight Loss Conversations with 3Health. This is Brad Butterfield, and I'm with Brandy Wiltermuth. We've been talking today about our medical weight loss program and working with medical weight loss and the behavioral component of our program. And so, Brandy, during the break, you wanted to talk about some other specific things that you've been seeing in the behavioral and with some of our patients. And so go ahead and pick that up and let's talk about some specific behavioral challenges that you're seeing with some of our patients, maybe even some specific eating disorders that you've been seeing.
Yeah, so some statistics to start off is, I think, helpful to put into context where I'm going. 30% of all patients enrolled in a medical weight loss program have some type of binge eating disorder.
Okay.
And if it's not a disorder, we all have disordered eating.
Okay. So DSM-5, our psychological Bible, so to speak, has specific criteria to meet binge eating disorder.
Exactly.
And I know that a lot of our patients don't hit all of those criteria, but they do binge eat, so to speak.
Okay. Right. And so that's sort of interesting that people come and their motivation is to lose weight, but they have this underlying disorder that makes it really difficult if we don't address it.
So give me, for instance, an example.
Well, you mean the type of patient?
Sure. Or what you would consider binge eating, would be doing.
Well, a classic example is I had a patient who, it was around Thanksgiving, and she was maybe 15 or 20 pounds overweight, young lady, young mother, and she was hosting Thanksgiving, and she went and bought everything she needed at the grocery store, and she bought a pumpkin pie, of course, and got home and was thinking about all of the people that were coming and how stressed out she was, and so she ate the pie.
Oh, before the dinner?
Yeah.
Okay.
Before she even started cooking the dinner. Okay.
And she ate the entire pie?
Ate the whole thing.
Okay.
And then she went, oh my gosh, I have to have pie.
Okay.
For Thanksgiving.
All right.
So she went and bought another pie, and she ate that one too.
Before dinner? Before she cooked the dinner?
Before she even attempted making the meal.
Okay, so we're two pies down now.
Yeah. So she went and bought another pie, and that one she didn't eat because she was so sick.
Okay.
So that's true binge eating.
Yeah.
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 A lot of people have where they will binge eat, say, a meal, you know, and it's not a frequent enough type of behavior that we can say that it's a binge eating disorder. But, you know, if people go once a week and they eat an entire pizza by themselves, that's not, you know, that's disordered.
Okay.
So there's a lot of people that have very in-between type of things. But unless we recognize it and can deal with that, then it's going to be pretty hard to help people lose weight.
Okay, so I have done this in my life, and we'll hear patients often binge on sugar.
Big time.
So you have those responses to sugar that you may open a package of Hershey's Kisses or chocolates and intend on having two or three, and all of a sudden you're down 10 and then you're down 20 and the whole package is gone.
So, well, it is addictive, Brad.
Well, I know it is.
I know it
Alexis,
is.
And so.
So, but if that occurs, you know, once a month, technically that's not a binge eating disorder, but it is binging.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
And we have, I mean, obviously we need help with the emotional behavioral construct of why people are using food to cope with the stress in that lady's situation. But I also use medications, and the most powerful tool, I believe, is food. So food itself can help people sustain energy, give them more resilience in terms of what they have to face every day, and they're less likely to get into those kinds of, you know, eating patterns if they have good energy and they feel their body.
Right. And so around energy, I have a talk that I, pretty early on in our program, that I have with patients about willpower. And you've both heard me say a number of times that I don't believe in willpower. And when I say that to patients, they're eyebrows kind of go up and they say, what do you mean you don't believe in willpower? And basically that also is around energy. So if it's late at night for most of us, and we're either hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, which is the acronym for HALT, and you have poor food choices in your house, I don't believe in using willpower, because you may win that contest and have that conversation 9 times out of 10, but you only have to lose once, and you're going to fail. And so willpower, when you're either hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, just doesn't work. And so
we need other strategies.
And so I say to people, don't use it. Forget it. Don't use willpower.
Right.
If you're low on energy, willpower is not going to work. So quit calling on it, because then we self-deprecate. We're failures. We're not worthy, and it just is a spiral.
Yeah.
So let's get rid of willpower.
Another one that we see fairly frequently is called night eating syndrome, and that occurs in about 9 to 12% of patients in weight loss programs.
So night eating syndrome is not before we go to bed at 9 o'clock.
Right. It's getting up out of bed, waking up
in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And or it can be that people just never got to sleep, because if they have terrible insomnia and then get up out of bed and hadn't fallen asleep completely, but then go raid the kitchen and eat, then that can qualify. But it also has to have a few other things. So some degree of insomnia is required, and morning, what they call morning anorexia. So people don't want to eat in the morning, obviously, because they've eaten quite a bit all night. And this problem is really prevalent in females. And we see it addressed sometimes in sleep clinics, but it's really part of an eating disorder category. And it tends to be in females more, because it can be started when women are breastfeeding and they wake up in the middle of the night to feed their baby. They're on a no clock, right? There's no schedule. So baby's eating, they're up, they start eating because it's not dinner time or nighttime or whatever. And then baby grows up and they continue the behavior.
Yeah, they've also gotten into disordered sleep patterns at that point. Yeah,
and the statistics on in terms of caloric or nutrient intake is usually it's a 7-to-1 ratio of carbohydrate to protein. So people aren't going and eating all the boiled eggs in the fridge, right?
Okay.
So these are serious things, and we encounter them quite a bit because people are seeking help, obviously, with their weight. And I don't know, I think some people don't even recognize, you know, they don't come in and say, hey, I'm doing this behavior, I need help with that, and that's the source of my weight problem. It's almost like they may not even recognize that that is a big part of why they're unable to lose weight. It's kind of interesting. But those kinds of things can't be tackled by medication and changing nutrition in itself.
So we need to deal with the emotional issues and the disordered eating.
Right.
Okay. And a number of issues that I see, emotional issues in my part of the practice, quite sadly and unfortunately, is we've seen a correlation between physical, emotional, and sexual abuse, especially childhood sexual abuse or adolescent sexual abuse in a number of our patients, and how that's been correlated with with obesity and eating disorders. It's very sad, mm-hmm. but unfortunately, it's happened a lot.
Right.
And those issues will come up with a number of our patients.
Right. And I don't think very many people come with the intention of, you know, maybe exploring that necessarily. But often, like you said, it right. comes out, and then that has to be.
Yeah, and we need to do some work around it. So, or patients will talk about that openly because they have done work around it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, often in our initial psychological evaluation, we ask those questions.
Right.
And if they have done work around it, they recognize that that's where the eating disorder came in,
mm-hmm.
and we can move on. And if they haven't, then we will discuss those things so that we can get to what's going on with their eating and move forward in health,
right.
be healthy. So,
yeah. So, you know, I think that we're talking about a lot of heavy things,
mm-hmm.
And that could be something that applies to our listeners out there, but there's a fair amount of people who just don't know what is best for their body in terms of nutrition and then stress eat.
Sure.
Or have other kinds of emotions that lead them to use food for coping, and that's quite common as well.
Yeah. So, Brandy, often patients will come in to you and I, and they will, that's a word that they will use. They'll say, yeah, I'm so stressed.
Stress,
you know,
is
stressed
a big trigger.
I'm stressed with my kids, I'm stressed with my job, I'm stressed with time management, I'm stressed with, you know, all kinds of things.
Yeah, so and we can't prescribe a vacation.
Right, so we start talking, we need to talk about that. What's stressing you out?
Right. And there's, you know, there's programs out there where they just take people away and remove all of those stressors and teach them how to eat and exercise, but then they inevitably have to go back to their life.
Right.
So even though that could be a good way to gain a lot of skills in a short period of time, I think it's more important to have people learn and practice these skills while they're actually living their life.
Well, what we've done is we've developed our curriculum mm-hmm. in our program. We have a number of curriculum items, and some of those things that we talk about with our patients as they go through our program is, you know, I ask them, are you willing to take some time to take care of yourself, to set aside some time during the day,
mm-hmm.
build some boundaries around that for self-care?
Right.
And we've talked about this before in our program. And by doing that, by practicing some new behaviors around your health, then you are a better coworker or mom or spouse or partner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny how that works. It's almost counterintuitive to a lot of our patients. They put everybody else first.
Right.
And then they put themselves, like, what, number 5 or 8 or 10 on the list?
Yeah, pretty far down there.
And then they often will look at us and say, well, why am I so stressed? Because there's no self-care going on.
Right.
And so...
And some people even view what we ask them to do as just more to do.
Right. Oh my God, you're asking me to put something else on the list.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's sometimes a process, and we yeah. start with small steps
yeah.
and
so
build.
That's part of what we talk about.
Yeah. It's okay. pretty... So I was wondering if you had a situation or patient that comes to mind that was... stands out as someone who really was challenging to you?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I don't know if I want to talk, if I have a specific patient. We were talking about change during the break. And I think sometimes we all ask ourselves when we're dealing with maybe with a family member or a friend, you might even ask yourself, is change possible? We'll get so frustrated, you'll say, gee, can people change? Yes, people can change, but that's the point. People have to do the change themselves. So
and they want to.
Yeah. And so I think everybody comes into our program wanting change.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our mission, our task is to come alongside and educate and support and help people change, show them how they can. But the change itself for all of us has to come from within and from ourselves. Mm-hmm. So it's when I was a younger therapist and less experienced, sometimes I'd find myself in a session doing all the work.
Right.
and by that I mean I was making all the suggestions, or I was doing all the talking, or I was trying to do
problem solving.
Yeah, do all the problem solving, and every time I did that, I'd have this list, and the patient might not even be responding very much, or just might be saying, "Nope, that won't work. Nope, that won't work." And about halfway through a session, I would internalize and say to myself, "Gee, you're doing all the work here." And they're not. And I would catch myself short and say, wait a minute, this isn't right. So even if that meant I had to have long pauses or times of silence, the work needs to come from the patient.
Right.
And they need to make the change. So I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, but, I mean, I think that's you know, in a roundabout way, you said the people who are more reluctant to change and maybe don't really want to. Right. Even though they say they do and they're coming to get help, they're pretty resistant to making any of the changes that would get them where we want them to go, or want to go.
That's, I would say that most of the people come to us, or I love working with them.
They're ready.
They're eager to make changes. Every once in a while you get somebody that's might be a little bit resistant, and then the challenge is, well, where is that coming from?
Mm-hmm.
It might be coming from fear, right? Or a low self-esteem or sense of lack of self-worth. And so that's kind of the challenge is let's explore that a little bit, see where that's coming from.
Yeah, I can see that.
And then often a few sessions in, that might break free and break open and something good will happen and we'll get through it.
Yeah.
But
I can imagine there's a level of trust that needs to be built.
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
And so good things can happen. But, sometimes it could be a challenge that way. So we're going to move into our last session here after a break. This is Weight Loss Conversations with 3Health. And we are talking about the medical and the behavioral and how the combination of both really lead to good health and weight loss. We'll be right back.
Introducing 3Health Medical Weight Loss Solutions, a unique weight loss clinic backed by real medical research with a treatment focusing on the entire person, mind, body, and spirit. From medical services for obesity and high blood pressure to behavioral services for emotional eating and depression, 3Health Medical Weight Loss Solutions can help you change your relationship with food, your relationship with yourself, and with life. Find out more, 425-606-0022. Or online at 3.health. That's 3.health.
Make it a great day. Keep your dial on Alternative Talk 1150.
Hi, welcome back. This is Weight Loss Conversations with 3Health. I'm Brad Butterfield, and I'm here with Brandy Wiltermuth and our medical assistant, Alexis Morales. Alexis, you had an email that was sent to us from a patient. Why don't you read that for us?
Yeah. So she says, "Hi, Brandy, Brad, and Marlene. I have a personal question. I listen to your show, and I'm excited that you talk about mental health so often. In the past, I've suffered from anorexia. Is this something you encounter with patients, and can you still help me lose weight? I've gained about 50 pounds in the past 4 years, but I'm worried about slipping back into those habits, so I avoid diets altogether."
Yeah, anorexia was a serious mental health and diagnosed eating disorder, and so probably what I'd want to do is get a lot more history.
Yeah, her name is Cheryl, by the way.
From Cheryl. So I think what we would do is we'd have Cheryl come in and we'd do a psychological evaluation.
Or a free consultation first.
Yeah, a free consultation. But eventually do a psychological evaluation. And I would want to know a lot of the history around her anorexia, how serious it was, how extreme it was, and then how long ago it was. So I'd want to know.
Do you encounter anorexia, Brad?
I have. We don't work with people with anorexia in our clinic.
It's active.
That's right. Active anorexia.
Usually in the past. Yeah. It doesn't sound like it's active right now.
And we've worked with a lot of patients also that have been suffered with bulimia that have done different forms of purging.
Right. And a lot of people, you know, start off when they're younger doing a lot of anorexia, bulimia, restrictive type eating, and then actually end up having binge eating disorder later in life.
And then move into obesity. Mm-hmm. That we've seen that. So it's not uncommon. So we'd want to get that history and see how long ago that was with Cheryl.
So I think it's important. Maybe she's asking if we help people who have had eating disorders.
Yes, we have.
We've
definitely have worked with people with past eating disorders.
Because we talk about disordered eating, but you know, how many of our patients do have like a clinical eating disorder or have had an eating disorder?
Yeah, so I think that's a good point. Eating disorders. We've worked with a number of people who have had past eating disorders.
Because like we were talking about earlier is using food as medicine and sort of healing for these people. But if food is sort of the enemy in their eyes, that can be rather difficult.
Right. Yeah. And that is a challenge for a lot of those patients. And a lot of times we can't be as prescriptive. But sometimes we can, and most of the time people say, you know, I'm ready. I understand the macronutrient concept, and I'm okay with that. But once in a while, we have to kind of tread lightly there.
And I think, Brandy, with your nutrition and eating plan with this patient would be very careful. And then we'd be watching this patient very carefully with her weight loss and how extreme her weight loss was or how rapid it was.
Right. And again, sometimes medications are helpful and there are other medications that we would look at and probably avoid.
And I would want to be very aware of her family system. And her support system. Who is she living alone? Is she in a relationship? Is she in a family system? That's one of the things with eating disorders, in particular anorexia and bulimia, were often done in secretive surroundings. Who else is watching her and who's she living with and being
aware of
that.
Where does she work?
That's right.
I've had a lot of people who are working around food a lot, and they don't eat when they're working. Mm-hmm. But then after work, they tend to get into a whole bunch of different things.
Right.
She also says something else that I know that we work on very heavily with our patients, that she avoids diets altogether, and we kind of, you know,
we
scoff
too
at the diet word, you know, because
it's
inherently negative.
Right.
And really a diet is just kind of what we're eating. So we use nutrition as a way to kind of describe what we're doing for patients, because we don't want the word diet to be or feel restrictive in that way.
Right. And to me, it's just more, this is what this does in your body. And if we want more of that, we have more of that.
And so Cheryl may be somebody who is on a spectrum here of extremes, Brandy, with food. So we're talking about gaining 50 pounds. We're talking about anorexia. We're talking about diet. So food is being seen in extremes here.
Right.
Instead of in a healthy way. So there may be a lot of education as to how she's seeing food.
And sometimes
and using food.
We have to say, well, let's get a handle on some of the emotional stuff before we're even going to introduce, you know, talking about nutrition.
Yeah. And Brad, I wanted to bring this up earlier when I talked about like people who go through bariatric surgery. A lot of times they aren't given that behavioral support like throughout their surgical process and right after.
Do you mean preoperatively?
No, not preoperatively, but right after their main focus is losing the weight. So they are following up with a surgeon or a nutritionist and they're losing the weight as expected. But what we do here at 3 Health is as they're losing weight, we're addressing the emotional connection that they have with food.
Right. Absolutely.
Which is not really common out there. Usually it's the main focus is lose the weight and then if you have problems later, then we'll deal with that.
That's a good point, Alexis. So the first 3 months and often the first 6 months in our program, we're seeing people every 2 weeks.
Right.
So they have sessions with the therapist here every 2 weeks as they're losing weight.
Yeah. I think that support is really important because when we used to see those surgical patients, oftentimes they were so excited about their weight loss that their mental health kind of became an issue in the wayside until it was kind of front and center.
Yeah, that's a good point. And what was happening was they were feeling so successful with the weight loss that they were blowing off their therapy sessions thinking they were achieving success. They didn't need them because the weight loss was happening. And so what was happening then 12 and 15 months later, they were coming in and frankly, they were often an emotional mess because they hadn't done the work. They had done the weight loss thinking everything was fine. And then they would come in the clinic and really struggling with a lot of emotional issues. So that's why Brandy and I and Marlene have written these protocols. And we want to see people every 2 weeks when they're initially losing weight 3 to 6 months.
That's why 3 Health is different than everything
Good
else.
Good point. Thank you for bringing that up.
To that end, preoperatively, we can also help people get ready for the surgery so they're not so surprised afterward.
Well, and Brandy, the patients that hit the surgery running, so to speak, and did good preoperative work that you worked with and that I worked with in counseling preoperatively did so much better postoperatively.
Right. The results were...
Yeah, they were successful not only with good weight loss, but they were successful emotionally postoperatively. Right. They did much better. So, Alexis, do you have some announcements for us? I know that we have a really exciting conference coming up.
Yeah, that's probably the only one right now is we're going to be going to Low Carb USA and get to meet all of our heroes.
And we're excited because it's in Seattle. Typically, we have to
travel pretty far.
Travel around the country to go to these significant seminars and conferences. And this one's going to be in Seattle this year. So, when is it?
It's May 3rd through the 5th.
Okay. Yeah.
And a lot of the times, a lot of the people that me and Brandy talk about on our podcast, a lot of these people are going to be here.
Okay.
They all have their own podcasts that we listen to.
And they're, very prominent in the low-carb ketogenic world.
Okay. So what we're telling our listening audiences, so we will share with great enthusiasm after we go to the conference.
I
is that the point?
If you guys... try to get me to not share, that's going to be the problem.
Okay, so we'll be super smart after we go to the conference. Is that what you're saying?
Or
we'll have lots of enthusiasm about all of the new things that we're going to be seeing and learning.
Yeah.
I know that we do this. We do it at the very least, we do it annually and sometimes every 6 months. So we're going to have it's kind of a positive shot in the arm for learning opportunities for
and
us.
And we pass that stuff on to our patients. Okay, we're
a month out and already super excited.
Okay, it's going to be really exciting. So this has been Weight Loss Conversations with 3 Health Medical Weight Loss Solutions. It's been great being here with you this week.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you again next Monday morning at 8 a.m.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Weight Loss Conversations, brought to you by 3 Health Medical Weight Loss Solutions. We love hearing from our audience, so be sure to drop us a note. We so appreciate when you tell family and friends about our program. Also, don't forget that our past programs are found at 1150kknw.com. That's 1150kknw.com. Have a wonderful week and tune in next Monday at 8 a.m. That's 8 a.m. Monday. Be sure to visit our website at 3.health. That's THREE.health.
The content and opinions expressed during this program were those of the hosts, guests, and callers. They are not intended in any way to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent disease.